This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I was with Swifty when we first drafted him in Detroit a number of years ago, and I followed his career even after he left Detroit, and think very highly of him. He's an explosive athlete. There's a number of things that he can do, both in the running game and the passing game. I do think he can help ignite an offense because he's got that playmaking ability. So it'll be fun to start to work together again here this springtime with him.
That is your new Bears coach, Ben Johnson, talking about your old running back, DeAndre Swift. And that's exactly what you'd say if you were trying to trade DeAndre Swift. Because teams that get rid of DeAndre Swift do really well. See the Lions when Ben Johnson was there. And see the Eagles in the Super Bowl and holding the trophy for details. Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. Joining me on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is Herb Howard of the Bigs. Download the Circa app today. And today the running backs are running, along with the quarterbacks throwing and those who want to throw and the wide receivers catching, those who want to catch and run around. And so it's all the pretty shiny things going on down there as far as the running backs go. The Bears are going to need one. Herb, thank you for joining me today from the Combine. What have you seen? What has caught your eye this week?
What's up, Steve? It's the combine. You get all these athletes. They're world-class athletes. They're running around in shorts and T-shirts. For the most part, they look good, and they've been trained pretty well in terms of answering the questions that they have when they do their press conferences in the morning.
Yeah.
And so, you're going around, and you're trying to figure out what matters, right? What actually matters and what makes sense for me, that would be for the Bears. What makes sense for the team that you're covering? And, you start to pick up some of the tea leaves and then all of the other things that go on around the combine, outside of the workouts and the interviews and press conferences. It's, the conversations that you may have at the restaurants or the bars, and after you start to pick up some of the tea leaves on, trying to put some things together that may make sense.
Well, what have you concluded? Connect the dots for us, Herb.
Well, I think one of the biggest dominoes that happened was kind of out of the Bears' control, and that was just, the Chiefs announcing that they were going to tag Trey Smith. I think everybody knew that he would be the Bears' main target in free agency, and they certainly had the money to go out and sign him if he was available, but the Chiefs said, no, he's not getting out of here. And so the Bears have to then pivot just a little bit in terms of what they're going to do with free agency. Do they start to look at other guys? that are on the market that can play interior offensive line? Or do they start to, you know, take a deeper dive in terms of evaluating these guys that are here at the draft? And so I think the Bears want to have some flexibility with what they're able to do at that number 10 pick. And if they were able to have, you know, Trey Smith and maybe a Drew Dahlman, then that would have allowed them the flexibility to say, okay, well, maybe we can address the defensive line at number 10, and we don't have to be pigeonholed into figuring out offensive linemen like Will Campbell or Booker out of Alabama. But I think until they're able to solve some of their problems via free agency, their draft picture can't be crystal clear.
All right, Herb Howard of the Bigs joins me on the Score. We're talking Bears football and the combine and filling holes and positions. I just promoted you to GM of the Bears. You get to sit in Ryan Poles' big puffy chair until Kevin Warren tells you to move. But for now, what the Chiefs did with Trey Smith is exactly what they did last year with L'Jarius Smith and L'Jarius Sneed. They traded Sneed. They slapped the non-exclusive franchise tag on him, and then they on March 4th, and they traded him to Tennessee on March 29th. Would you trade to get Trey Smith, and if so, what would be the most you would give up?
That's a good question, because now you're talking about paying him and also, you know, giving up the draft capital or whatever it may be. And so that makes the price a little bit steeper. But I do think the Bears need to solve that position. If you're going to continue to build this thing around Caleb, then you're going to have to pay the price. And so I don't know. The Bears got 2 second-round picks. It may not be – I don't think it would be quite that rich to go get him. If it does, like, they do have 2, and so maybe that would make some sense for them. But if you have to package a 3 and a 5 or something like that, I could see that still making sense, and then just go ahead and pay him. So I don't think that the price would get too high for me to say, no, I don't want him. I think you're talking about having a guy play a position of need at a really, really high level. He's young. He should still be ascending. He's been healthy relatively. And so I'd be willing to do what it takes to go ahead and bring him in.
So you mentioned Dahlman is the most attractive free agent. You have to address the offensive line. You think that under any condition, that has to be their first announcement when free agency opens? Is that the way you go? Or if they find, I don't know, a defensive, if somebody who can rush the passer, somebody close to the ball on the defensive side of the ball, if that's their first announcement, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. They have needs on both sides of the line of scrimmage, and so they just got to figure out how to go about getting them. If they think they can best acquire the defensive help that they need via free agency, then that's fine, as long as they feel like they can address their offensive needs in the draft. They've got, you know, first-round pick. They've got 2 seconds, so they should be able to address their needs. But this is a really – you start to evaluate, okay, is this class – is it better as a free agent class – for what I need, or is it better in terms of the draft? And I look at the draft and I see a lot of defensive linemen. There are tons of them down here that look really, really good, that are going to have productive NFL careers. And so I think that that's the side of the ball you look and say, okay, I can help myself on the defensive side here. Is that the same case in terms of free agency, or do I need to address offensive line and free agency? And so I think however they go about assessing that will kind of lay out the roadmap for what they want to do. But I do think they have to get the offensive line set. They haven't figured out center since Olin Krupp, Steve. I mean, it's been a problem ever since he left. Roberto Garza held it down for a little while. Cody Whitehead was here, probably better guard than center, but he, you know, did what the team needed him to do. But they haven't really figured out that position since Olin. They have to get that thing settled down. And I don't think that Drew Dahlman is, you know, all pro or anything like that. He can certainly be a professional center for you that can stabilize the interior of that offensive line. He's only 26 years old, I think, and so he's still an ascending player. He's been very, very durable. I think that he would make a lot of sense for them if they're able to bring him in.
You make an interesting point, and you're in discussing it, you seem to insist, as I would, that the Bears center next year be a professional center. He is a professional center. You're talking about Dahlman.
That would help.
As opposed to a rookie. Yeah, I mean, it would help because you're going to have – I don't want to say Caleb Williams is a rookie quarterback, but he's a first-year quarterback in whatever system Ben Johnson designs around him. And there are still looks and the read, the – all that goes into – from the call to getting out of the huddle to the cadence to identifying movement, things like that. And the center, a professional center, can help you a lot. A rookie would be learning, a rookie would know less than you would if you're Caleb Williams. I think that's important, and that's why that would be a place to overpay. Is there a plan B behind Dahlman that you think the Bears might be interested in?
No, I think Dahlman is hitting the lottery in terms of when he actually hit the market. Because, like I said, I don't believe he's, you know, top three, top five center. But the price is going to be dictated by when you hit the market and who else is there. And he's hitting the market at a time when there aren't really many other good options. And so you're going to have to pay to get him because he's at the top of the list. And so he's going to make himself some money. And it just is what it is. The price is the price. The Bears need it. And so they may have to go ahead and pay that price unless they can figure out that unless they identify, you know, kids in the draft that they really, really like and think they can come in and be successful. But you're talking about, you know, pairing a young quarterback with a young center, and there's going to be some growing pains with that. I mean, I know we all heard the soundbite, the clip that went out between Coleman Shelton and Caleb in the middle of the game when Coleman emphatically identified a fire, a pressure that was about to come. And Caleb's like, I know. And he did recognize and he got the ball out quick on that particular play. But it's just those two people needing to be in lockstep. They need to see the game the same way. They need to identify things at the same time to make sure, that they've got everything protected and that they can get the ball out.
My guest is Herb Howard, the Bigs. We're talking Bears football here. The combine's going on. Free agency will start. Then comes the draft and all sorts of people, players moving around. The offensive line is something Ryan Poles should know a lot about, being a former offensive lineman. He has been shown, after saying this is the greatest depth, the best depth I've had since I've been here, and that line nearly got Caleb Williams killed. It got him sacked 68 times. If it was any more depth, he might have set a record and sent him home in a coffin. Do you trust Ryan Poles to get this right? If so, why? If not, why?
Listen, all I can do is go by what I've seen so far, and he hasn't been able to figure it out in his tenure here, right? And considering that should be his area of expertise, it's a little concerning. But to me, offensive line, in terms of player acquisition, pretty, pretty simple, right? You either buy them or you draft them really high. It's rare that you get a guy, you know, later in the round. I know we've just been talking about Trey Smith, and he's an example of a guy that you found later in the draft that turned into a really, really good player. But that is extremely rare. That is the exception. It is not the rule. The rule is you look at the all pros, you look at the Pro Bowlers, those guys, first, second round picks, or they're very high priced free agents. That's what it is. And so Ryan Poles has gone about trying to figure out, you know, can I get a third round tackle out of Yale? Can I get a fifth round tackle out of Southern Utah? Can I pay $3 million for a center? Can I pay $5 million for a guard? And it's like, you can do that, sure. But are they going to piece together and make a great O-line? Absolutely not. There just aren't enough people on earth that big, that move that well, that play that at a high level. And so if you're going to get one of those guys, they're going to come at a premium that's usually at the top of the draft or very, very high price in free agency.
Herb Howard is my guest from the Bigs. We're talking Bears football here. Herb, I guess I was like every other Bears fans when they signed Ben Johnson, and he's looking at Caleb, and you prepare to be uncomfortable. I wanted the season to start again right then, immediately. I want to see this. Come on, go out and play. Let me see this. You get a new toy. You want to see how it feels, what you can do with it. And I know that will lead to, like last year, there were unrealistic hopes. There's Caleb Williams. Look, rookie quarterback. So all we needed was a rookie quarterback who can play quarterback. Everything else is there, and not everything else was there. So we tend to get our head over our skis because McCaskey ownership has pretty well sucked for the last 14,000 days and yet to repeat a Super Bowl. And I feel it happening, though. I feel all the discussions, the one you and I are having, the way some of the reporting is all based on, yes, this could be a playoff team. Yes, if this, if that, it's not that much. I don't know if they're too far away or what. Where do you think they are? What's a realistic, what's a pragmatic view? And I know they haven't drafted anybody. They haven't gone through free agency, and they have a rookie head coach as good as his offense in Detroit was. What do you think is a realistic expectation?
That's a great question, Steve. It's interesting because they have the ability to turn this thing around. I do think they can flip this O-line in this particular offseason, right? And I do think they have some good foundational pieces on that defense they can add to the defensive line. And so those things don't seem impossible. It doesn't seem like those are, you know, insurmountable deficiencies that they have. But my confidence in them actually being able to identify those guys and bring them in, develop them, and then turn them into difference makers, right? And I think they've had opportunities to do that, and we just haven't seen it for one reason or another. Whether you thought Jalen Carter, you know, couldn't come into your locker room, he wasn't going to be mature enough or professional enough, or he's an all-pro, right? And it's like you got to be able to bring in players that are that good, and you got to be able to withstand that, like whatever they may be. And I think that's the responsibility of the head coach, of a GM, to say, no, we can bring him in and we can assimilate him into our program. But the Bears have avoided that a couple of times. And I think that that's going to have to be something that they change or feel better about, because you got to bring in good players. You just have to, especially when you're talking about in the trenches. And so I know it's a very, very long way of answering a simple question, but I think they could do it. I don't know what my confidence level is on their ability to do it. And so I would say, could they be a legitimate contender going into the 26th season? I think they could be. I think they should be able to have the resources to be able to do that. I don't know if they will be.
Okay, you bring up Jalen Carter. And before I let you go, Herb Howard of the Bigs, we're talking football here. Before I let you go, Jalen Carter was the Bears. Ryan Poles ran away from him twice, and for the reason you say, as you couldn't trust him. You didn't know how that would fit. Do we have the infrastructure? Now, Mike Green presents another case. He does not seem as reckless as Jalen Carter, but there are serious charges, and however it plays out or not, it could be a distraction. Yet he is one of the top rushers. He led the league, led the nation in sacks, and you have a rookie head coach. Should that be Ben Johnson's call? Do I want to deal with this? Let me interview the kid. Do I want to deal with that potential distraction? What's real? What's imagined? Is that, from what you've experienced, what you've seen around the Bears locker room, the core players, could they handle this kind of distraction, this kind of potential problem, better than before when Jalen Carter was run away from by the Bears?
I think the Bears got a locker room of you know, tough-minded guys that are still going to show up and do their job no matter what the outside noise is, right? And they've dealt with a lot of turmoil, and I know it hasn't translated to wins, but it also hasn't turned into this divisive thing where the locker room is fighting each other and that type of situation. So I think they could absorb, you know, different types of personalities. But I go back and I look at the Jalen Carter thing, for example, right? And I know Mike Green has a different set of circumstances. But, like, Jalen Carter was drag racing the night that they won the championship. I was 22 years old. I had a Mustang. I used to drive that thing so ridiculously fast, Steve. It didn't make sense, right? Like, and they had a tragic night, and then he couldn't compartmentalize between the workouts, so now he has a terrible workout. And you're like, well, wait, what's up with this kid? But I don't know that if you do your homework, you're going to find a ton of just him just being reckless and making bad decisions and being a bad person, per se, right? And so then you start to run away from guys and take them off the board, but you've also seen him dominate the entire country. Mm-hmm. And so, how do you go about evaluating these things? There's the kid, what's his name, Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M, and everybody's enamored with how he looks and the numbers that he's put up at the combine. He's this freakish athlete. I saw him on the field yesterday, and I was like, or the day before, I was like, oh my God, like, this dude looks like a freakish athlete. But I look at his tape and I look at his stats, and he's got exactly 1.5 sacks each of the last 2 or 3 years. And it's like, well, where's the production to match this freakish athlete? And sometimes you get enamored with those types of things, and then you end up, you know, drafting guys for certain traits and not the production. And so to me, you look at the tape, you look at the production, you say, can this guy help us? And then you should be able to put everything else around him in terms of infrastructure to absorb all the other things that may or may not even come with it.
Well done. Well said. Herb, I really appreciate your time. I know it's been a busy week for you, and thank you for your thoughts and insight.
Thank you so much, Steve. Always a pleasure, man.
All right. Herb Howard, the Bigs, does good work, good information. We'll take a break. When we come back, well, it was a week we lost a legend, and a legendary release of a film also in 1977. We'll share a lot of that and the cultural zeitgeist which is what we do here on Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now, you're doing something for the culture.
Baby.
Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it. Do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, warn the Chiefs.
Owns. Owns.
Owns. Owns.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
We are penetrating the cultural zeitgeist. Been away from it for a while, but we are back with it on Saturday Suckage. And we're back with it with sad news. Coach Norman Dale, who led Hickory High to the 1954 championship, passed away at 95.
There's a tradition in tournament play to not talk about the next step until you've climbed the one in front of you. I'm sure going to the state finals is beyond your wildest dreams, so let's just keep it right there. Forget about the crowds, the size of the school, their fancy uniforms, and remember what got you here. Focus on the fundamentals that we've gone over time and time again. And most important, don't get caught up thinking about winning or losing this game. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential, to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game. In my book, we're going to be winners. Okay? All right. Let's go. Let me hear it. Go, 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 go.
Gene Hackman as Norman Dora. As Norman Dale. I confuse it with his great role of Popeye Doyle. He played Popeye Doyle, and as an homage, I wore my pork pie hat, a la Popeye Doyle, from the French Connection. I wore that the day that his passing was announced, although apparently he'd been dead for 9 days. The police investigation, this whole thing just gets weirder with Gene Hackman. He was 95 when he passed away, and he was found fallen. His 64-year-old wife was found on the bathroom floor, an open bottle of pills next to her. Don't know what the pills were. And then one of their three dogs was found dead as well. It sounded all like a carbon monoxide leak. It was not. And now they'd been dead for 9 days. So the police investigation continues. Nonetheless, Gene Hackman as Norman Dale. That speech we just played as they began the regionals, as Hickory High went to Hinkle Fieldhouse is where they went, and the movie version of the real life story of Milan High winning the championship, and that speech was not, sorry, it was just not as good as Herb Brooks, but you know, for basketball it's pretty good. Hoosiers, the greatest basketball movie ever made, certainly. David Anspaugh directed it. Here's stuff I did not know until Gene Hackman passed away. David Anspaugh, at that time unproven, he was on the Rich Eisen show. You know who was originally going to be Norman Dale delivering that speech you just heard? Jack Nicholson. Jack. Jack as Coach Norman Dale. Turns out Nicholson had a connection, David Anspaugh, and read it and said, that's the guy, meaning that's the guy he wanted to play. However, he was supposed to make a film with Cher and somebody else, and it got tied up in litigation, as these things can do, and he couldn't get out of his deal. And somebody got the script, the story, to Gene Hackman, who put up his hand and said, I'll do it. Right here. I'll be Norman Dale. Hoosiers did all right with Gene Hackman, didn't it? Right? It's iconic. Greatest basketball movie ever. But it turns out Gene Hackman, who wanted to do this movie that Jack Nicholson couldn't, didn't just think the movie would suck as they were doing it, which is appropriate for Saturday Suckage. He thought it would kill his career in the 80s. Here's David Anspaugh on with Susie Schuster, who was guest hosting on the Rich Eisen Show, and she's talking with David Anspaugh about what Gene said.
What was he like to be with on the set? And yes, it is widely written about that he challenged you on the set all the time, that he looked at his co-actor and said, I hope you've got a backup plan because this will be a disaster. What was it like working with him?
Well, he said that to Dennis Hopper. I hope you've invested well because we'll never work after this film.
I hope you've invested well because we'll never work after this film. That was in the 80s, and Gene Hackman and Dennis Hopper. Oh, my God. That's what he thought of Hoosiers. It became iconic. And he went on to the body of work that he did that included, of course, for sports purposes, we have to say he played another coach. He played Jimmy McGinty. He coached Keanu Reeves and The Replacements. But he was a legend from Popeye Doyle on, The French Connection, the reason we should all wear pork pie hats for, or we'll lower our pork pie hats to half-mast for a week. I wore mine on Thursday. I love my pork pie hat. Hackman's filmography included former Chicago cop Dennis Farina in Get Shorty. And Gene, and by the way, and Popeye Doyle, French Connection was filmed in Chicago, shooting people running through the streets of Chicago, racing through the streets of Chicago, running up and down and shooting people on the L stops, which is happening more regularly now, right? Is that it? Or is it just in the, okay. But he could do comedy too. That's what made him so, so talented. The Blind Man in Young Frankenstein, serving soup to Peter Boyle's monster and pouring the hot soup in the monster's lap. It's a wonderful cameo, a wonderful scene. Gene Hackman is terrific. And in it wasn't his movie, but he won the ending of The Birdcage. I think it's a great movie with Robin Williams, Nathan Lane, and Gene Hackman as the rather conservative father of the groom, however you want to look at it. And the way that ended without Gene Hackman saying anything and the way he looked, the way he was costumed, watching Birdcage is a terrific experience. You should do that anyways. And watch for Gene Hackman at the end of this whole thing. It showed his arc, his depth and breadth as an actor. And wish him, you know, rest in peace. But he was terrific, and I'll go put on my pork pie hat. Omaha! Sticking with the movies, tomorrow's the Oscars, by the way. The Academy Awards will be presented. I was not nominated. Sticking with the movies, this week in 1977, the greatest sports movie of all time was released.
Hi, Jim Carrigan. Dennis, I know that some in our audience don't know the finer points of hockey. Could you tell them, for example, what is icing?
Well, icing happen when the puck come down, bang, you know, before the other guys, mm-hmm. nobody there, you know. Mm-hmm. My arm go comes out, then the game stop, then start up.
Mm-hmm. I see. What is high sticking?
High sticking happen when the guy take the stick, you know, and he go like that. You know, you don't do that.
You don't do that?
Oh, no, never, never.
Why not?
Against the rules. You know, you're stupid when you do that. Just some English pig with no brain
Dennis,
at all, you know.
What is slashing?
Slashing is like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there's a penalty for that?
Yeah. And for a trip also, you know,
oh.
like that. And mm-hmm. for hook, like this. And for spear, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. All bad.
Bad.
You do that, you go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get free.
The Chiefs are at home tonight against Cyanusport at the War Memorial at 8. Good seats are still available. I think that went very well.
One of the great movie openings. One of the great opening scenes from a movie. Goaltender Denny Lemieux, stupid English, stupid, stupid, never know. And Jim Carr from Slapshot. Of course, it's Slapshot. Reg Dunlop, the coach, the Hanson brothers, Ned Braden, and Killer Carlson. And what Nancy Dowd did when she wrote it about the Charlestown Chiefs, they were the Johnstown Jets. Her brother Ned Dowd played in the league. And he told his sister, who was a writer, there's some great stuff down here. He was just telling her about his experience. He said, this might be a movie. She gave him a tape recorder. He turned it on as they sat in the locker room, such as they were, and he recorded it all, and she transcribed it. And she made a movie out of his experiences. Ned Dowd, by the way, in the movie, plays Ogie Oglethorpe. And Nancy Dowd wrote it. And all they did was change the Killer Carlson. Killer Dave. Dave's a killer. Dave's a killer. Jerry Hauser was the actor. So the Hanson brothers were really the Carlsons. There were three Carlson brothers. And they were the Hansons. And there was Dave Hanson, and he played Killer Carlson. They just changed the names slightly. The Charlestown Chiefs from the Johnstown Jets. And they made Slapshot. It's the greatest sports movie ever. I will not be taking questions. And on the anniversary week, Steve Carlson, who played Steve Hanson, tweeted out this thought. When killing them with kindness doesn't work, try a hockey stick. Results may vary.
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
What happened to putting on the foil?
Are you guys doing?
Putting on the foil.
Every game.
Yeah, you want some?
No.
Okay. Staying on brand, right, Tyler?
Always.
Okay. Are you the kind of person who takes your dog on vacation? Do you do that? You ever done that? No?
Ever? Can't say that I have.
Don't let your dog hear about this place. He will never let you forget it. It's called The Sanctuary. It's in Monterey, California. It's near Carmel. Do you know why? You know who used to be the mayor of Carmel, Tyler? You have a clue?
Not a clue.
One of America's great actors? Clint Eastwood.
Really?
Really? Yes. Yeah. Clint Eastwood was a former mayor of Carmel. And up in Monterey is something called The Sanctuary. They offer this to you. It's called the Ultimate Vacation. Ultimutt. See what they did there? And on the website, it says, embark on the ultimate pet-friendly retreat at The Sanctuary, the premier seaside destination in Monterey Bay, catering to furry companions. Embrace a paradise for pets with leisurely beachside strolls and welcoming communal spaces designed with dogs in mind. Yes. Designed with dogs in mind. Since its establishment, the sanctuary has wholeheartedly embraced pets, offering treats, water stations, and a warm reception for a nominal fee. Yes. There's always a nominal fee for things like this, whether it's human or canine. Another one to introduce you to the exclusive Ultimate Vacation, a VIP experience tailored for dogs and their devoted owners, elevating the standard of pet-friendly hospitality. This lavish upgrade includes access to our essential amenities, plus a luxurious microfiber dog robe. Yes, the website that I just read said that your pet will get a luxurious microfiber dog robe, a plush pet bed to use during the stay, premium purified water. I just said any water is good for your ultimate, but premium purified water and a $10 credit towards the delectable patio menu, P-A-W, get it? Patio menu at Saltwood Kitchen and Oysterette. Moreover, see, this is the part I worked up to get to this point. Moreover, all canine guests gain entry to the innovative Dog Stick Library. It's located at the beachfront, this Dog Stick Library. Each four-legged friend can select their preferred bone to savor while basking in the sunshine and coastal vistas. Your dog can walk over to this selection at this boneyard. They're mounted on in a essentially a picture frame, and your dog can walk over and just pick it out with his mouth and take it with him for the day. This Dog Stick Library, he can check out a stick for the day and chew on it, and then you return it. Some other dog can have the same enjoyment. This is part of the ultimate vacation, the sanctuary in Monterey. So there you go. For those of you who want to treat your dogs better than your kids. All right. Take a break when we come back. Before we get out of here, make way for Cubs baseball. WB Club has a meeting with two legendary members of the Wake and Bake Club. Sort of the Mount Cushmore of the Wake and Bake Club. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can. I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man, Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
Hey, smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time, did a gummy bear. I was like breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
Sure. Good advice, Nate Dogg. Welcome to the Wake and Bake Club on Saturday Suckage. Two of the most famous faces on our Mount Cushmore are making a movie. Cheech and Chong's last movie. The trailer's out. It's called Keep Smoking. Cheech and Chong's last movie. And Keep Smoking has released the trailer for the movie. It's a comedy documentary. It's a hybrid that chronicles a career of the iconic stoner duo, Variety says. The film's official logline reads, Cheech and Chong's last movie defies documentary expectations, offering a wildly imaginative take on genre convention. A true life tale told through a mix of animation and archival madness, all underscored by a classic cinematic road trip comedy tracing the enduring legacy of pioneering comics Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong. The film features interviews, sketches, and never-before-seen footage spanning the duo's five-decade career. The result is an unlikely story of friendship and fame, turmoil and defiance, rebellion, and ultimately, redemption. Those of us with Cheech and Chong in the early years know that there's a sports element to this. Besides the entire NBA getting high, I mean, there's a sports element to Cheech and Chong, and it's this song by Tyrone Shoelaces.
Basketball Jones, I got a basketball Jones, got a basketball Jones, oh baby, ooh. Yes, I'm the victim of a basketball Jones. Ever since I was a little baby, I always be dribbling. In fact, I was the baddest dribbler in the whole neighborhood. Then one day, my mama bought me a basketball, and I love that basketball. I took that basketball with me everywhere I went. That basketball was like a basketball to me. I even put that basketball underneath my pillow. Maybe that's why I can't sleep at night. I need help, ladies and gentlemen. I need someone to stand beside me. I need someone to set a pick for me at the free throw line of life. Someone I can pass to. Someone to hit the open man on to give him go. And not end up in the popcorn machine. So cheerleaders, help me out.
Basketball Jones, I got a basketball Jones.
Oh, that sounds so sweet.
Tyrone Shoelaces, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, in this movie, Lou Adler rides along with Cheech and Chong. He's a record producer, a legendary record producer. You probably know him as the guy in the hat, the guy in the beret next to Jack Nicholson sitting courtside at Laker games. That's Lou Adler.
Smoke weed every day.
I still have more on Cheech and Chong. They've appeared in 25 movies. Their big screen debut came in 1978, Up in Smoke. According to the trailer, their original films have grossed over $200 million. That's a lot of herb. Cheech and Chong's last movie starts its limited release on, guess what date, Wake and Bake members? Guess what date? You got an idea? You got an idea, Tyler? You got a guess?
420?
Yes, indeed. It goes nationwide on April 25th. You know how mainstream they are? Going back to the 60s, 70s with all the scary, dope humor. Their part of the opening for church-going Dave Wanstead here on The Score.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E.
Dave's not here. And neither is Saturday Suckage for now. Cheech and Chong. It sounds like a great idea for a movie, documentary, road trip. There you go. Thank you, Tyler Farengold, for staying on brand. So many times in so many ways, you stayed on brand for Saturday Suckage. If nobody important listened, I will be back next week. This is Chicago Sports Radio. Chicago Sports Talk Radio. Score. Already gone, and I'm
feeling so. It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh yeah.
That's
yeah.
It.